Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
When the cost of living rises, how you invest matters even more. A financial advisor can help you make sense of it all. Now's the time to invest with advice. Visit dynamic.ca/advice to learn more.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Rachel Wright, and at 14 hours GMT on Saturday the 24th of June, here is a special edition of the Global News Podcast. President Putin says Russia is facing a battle for its future in the face of an armed mutiny and accused the leader of the Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, of treason. Mr. Prigozhin has hit back directly at the Russian leader.
The president is deeply mistaken with regard to the betrayal of the motherland. We are patriots of our homeland. We fought and we are fighting. No one is going to turn themselves in at the request of the president, the FSB, or anyone else.
We'll bring you our latest reports and ask, who is Yevgeny Prigozhin and what does his challenge mean for Russia? Also in this podcast, we go to Ukraine to find out how they are reacting to this morning's developments.
The whole world thought that Russia was the second most powerful army in the world. And today we're seeing how Russian army is becoming the second most powerful army in Russia.
It's been an extraordinary day in Russia, and events are still moving rapidly. As we record this special edition of the Global News Podcast, the leader of the Russian Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, says he's taken over the southern city of Rostov-on-Don.
We are at the headquarters. We have taken Rostov's military installations under our control, including an airfield. Medical planes are taking off. There are no problems. We have taken all of it under control so that the Air Force can conduct strikes not against us, but against the Ukrainians.
And in the face of this unprecedented challenge on his authority, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has called it treason and a knife in the back and warned of punishment.
Any internal mutiny is a serious threat to our state, our nation. It is a blow to Russia, a blow to our people, and our actions to defend the state against this threat will be harsh. Those who consciously chose treason, blackmail, and terrorist methods will be inevitably punished.
Wagner troops appear to be taking action in the Voronezh region as well, a region which lies halfway between Rostov and the Russian capital Moscow. The authorities there say they are dealing with a fire at an oil depot. There are unconfirmed reports that the Russian army has set up machine gun posts in the southwest of Moscow, at a point where the motorway from the south reaches the city. Red Square has been sealed off with a visible security presence in surrounding streets. In an address to the Russian people, President Vladimir Putin promised to crush what he called a mutiny by forces who had betrayed the country. So how did we get here? For months, there's been a growing power struggle between Mr. Prigozhin and Russia's military chiefs, the Wagner boss accusing them of failing to equip his forces on some of the bloodiest front lines in Ukraine. Then on Friday morning, Mr. Prigozhin upped the ante considerably by accusing the Russian Defence Minister, Sergei Shoigu, of being behind the war in Ukraine. Here's our Russia editor, Steve Rosenberg.
I was astonished to watch Mr. Prigozhin's video address that was posted online, where he basically accused Sergei Shoigu, the Russian Defence Minister, of being behind the war in Ukraine, blaming him for the war, and saying that the justifications that the Kremlin had given, the original justifications, the need to denazify and demilitarize Ukraine, remember those back from February 2022, that this wasn't about those at all. He claimed that the Russian Defence Minister had wanted to be promoted from general to marshal. And at that point, I thought, and other people thought, that perhaps this was a ploy to give Vladimir Putin a way out of this war, which hasn't gone to plan, to make the Russian military leadership the fall guys here for Russian military failures. And then, yesterday evening, even more astonishment, as Mr. Prigozhin claimed that the Russian military, in other words, his own side, had launched a missile attack on a Wagner base camp, killing, he said, lots of people, although he provided no evidence of that, and then announcing that the Wagner had taken the decision to start a march of justice. He said it wasn't a military coup, but he said he had 25,000 Wagner fighters who were ready to get rid of evil, he said, in the Russian military leadership. So it was clear last night that he was laying down the gauntlet and this challenge to try to remove the Russian military leadership. And then waking up this morning, the reports that Wagner fighters had crossed over from Ukraine back into Russia, that they had entered Rostov. The reports this morning that Wagner is now in control of military sites in Rostov, including the airfield, including, it seems, from another video, the major regional military headquarters in Rostov. There was this extraordinary video that we saw this morning, again posted on social media, showing Yevgeny Prigozhin sitting between two very senior Russian military commanders, including a deputy defense minister, arguing with them, basically delivering an ultimatum to them, saying that, look, I've come here to get the Russian defense minister and the chief of the general staff. And until I do get them, we're going to stay right here. We're going to continue to blockade Rostov and we will head to Moscow.
Steve Rosenberg in Moscow. A short time ago, Olga Ivshina from the BBC Russian service gave her assessment of the rift between Prigozhin and Moscow to my colleague Lise Doucet.
It is an extraordinary development on the one hand. On the other hand, the possibility of it was widely discussed in the past few weeks and even months, because a few months ago, on the one hand, Yevgeny Prigozhin was, so to say, a soldier, a metaphorical soldier of Putin. He was supplying Ministry of Defense with catering, with, you know, feeding Ministry of Defense for many, many years. Then he became the founder, as far away as in 2013, allegedly, he became a founder of Wagner, their private military company, and they fought in what Putin thinks Russia's interests are in Donbass in Ukraine, in Syria, Libya, Africa, whatever Putin thought Russian shadow forces should be. But a few months ago, he started heavily criticizing Russia's Minister of Defense. And back then, everyone thought Putin is allowing him to do so to sort of boost competition. But recently, his remarks have become really harsh. So on the one hand, it is unexpected. On the other hand, it's a possibility many experts pointed to. But on the other hand, I would be very cautious looking at the current events because we don't really know what's happening. It's a lot of statements, especially by Prigozhin, but not that many video proofs. So, and Prigozhin is really good with PR. So who knows? Maybe it's another special operation by both Putin and Prigozhin, or maybe it's a real serious clash.
Just briefly sketch for us the lie of the land now. Rostov-on-Don, Voronezh, Moscow, what is the situation?
So Rostov-on-Don, it seems, on the one hand, there are no signs of huge fighting in Rostov-on-Don. It seems that Wagner soldiers are really on the ground there, controlling several buildings. On the other hand, there are some governmental soldiers as well. And to underline how complicated things are, they used to be the part of the same force. So they're wearing similar camouflage. It's really hard to distinguish them if you're not a specialist. And even if you are a specialist, it's almost impossible to distinguish between them just from the glimpse of an eye. So it seems in Rostov-on-Don, Wagner is controlling some of the buildings, and it seems they have moved into Voronezh. Voronezh is still quite far away from Moscow. It's more than 500 kilometers, so and practically it's more than 7 hours trip from Voronezh to Moscow. So it's still quite a long way. It seems something is going on in Voronezh. We saw that, for example, what it seems to be Wagner attempting to shoot down the Russian military helicopter, and it ended into the oil refinery getting on fire. So a lot of confusing messages, a lot of short videos around the world, but not much clarity at the moment.
Olga Ivshina. For more about what the Wagner Group is and who it's made up of, we can hear from Andrei Goryanov from the BBC's Moscow Bureau. He spoke to my colleague Claire Graham from the BBC World Service podcast, The Explanation.
It is usually named a private military company, but it's not just that. I'd say it is a network of dodgy and elusive businesses and people who don't operate under one organization or structure. To talk about Wagner, you have to understand that the mercenary activity in Russia is illegal. It is Putin's and Kremlin's proxy warfare, which is tasked to hold operations around the world. So therefore, they can operate in countries which are not stable on one hand and on another with a lot of resources which Wagner can absorb, possess, and then bring back to Russia. The deal is Kremlin says, you do what we say and you can do whatever you like around the world. We need to talk a bit about history of Wagner here. So it emerged in 2014 in Crimea and East Ukraine. And that's when we first hear about the name of their first commander, Utkin.
That's Dmitry Utkin, formerly of Russian military intelligence, who is believed to have founded the Wagner Group in 2014, naming it after his own former call sign.
Back then, they just were tasked to make sure that the illegal Russian annexation of Crimea would be supported by some Russian proxies. They're called Green Men.
Crimea's main connection to the outside world, today in the hands of men with machine guns. Simferopol International Airport in southeast Ukraine, but patrolled by men without markings on their uniforms and apparently loyal to Russia. The armed men in green military uniforms have taken over the building containing the control tower in Crimea's main civilian airport.
Some of those green men were not Russian military. We didn't know by them who they were, and Putin denied their existence, but he confirmed later on. So they made sure that the Crimea annexation was performed under their control. And 1 year after, they introduce a patron, and that's when Yevgeny Prigozhin appears. Yevgeny Prigozhin is known as Putin's chef. He just had a catering business which served Kremlin. He have become a head of the Wagner Group somewhere in 2015 or 2014. And that's not his only business. He had very different activities. For example, one of his very famous one is so-called Trolls Factory. So they had a troll factory which was interfering in American elections.
The Wagner Group's engagement in conflict zones around the world provides convenient cover for the Kremlin's military manoeuvres.
In 2015, they started operations in Syria, then they moved to Libya, they were in Sudan and Mozambique and Mali. All those countries, they were doing some job of, on one hand, trying to perform Kremlin's tasks and deliver what Kremlin's interested in, and on the other hand, trying to make some money out of the places they were operating in.
So today it's estimated there are 50,000 Wagner mercenaries fighting in Ukraine. Who are they and how are they recruited?
You can think of people who have some military experience, supposedly war veterans from Afghanistan. Some people who fought in Chechen wars in Russia. Those people who don't really fit into the military. Also, there are some people who are soldiers of fortune, just professional people who want to fight around the world and make money and do whatever they like in any part of the world and take the risk. All of that definitely changed in 2022 when Russia started a massive invasion in Ukraine.
These aren't regular soldiers, they're mercenaries. A network which does a lot of Russia's fighting. It's run by this man, Yevgeny Prigozhin. From one of Solidar's salt mines on Russian state TV, he claimed to have completely taken the town. Ukrainians are probably just above us, they say. Let's go and find them.
Wagner was very active from the very first day, but it was quite obvious that it wasn't enough people of Wagner Group for the full-scale operation, and therefore they started to recruit imprisoned people. Those people who served their sentences in the prison were to fight in Ukraine, and after that they would be pardoned. And we see people coming back from the battleground with their pardoning letters from Kremlin.
Wagner mercenaries almost never talk to the media, but two former members agreed to talk to us anonymously.
There are no clear rules.
If a workforce is needed to dig trenches, for example, or do some kind of labor, then the prisoner has a value as a slave. If that's not required, then the result is obvious. No one wants an extra mouth to feed.
Former members of the Wagner Group ending that report, and we also heard from Andrei Goryanov from the BBC's Moscow Bureau. Now, we heard there about the leader of the Wagner Group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, who President Putin has accused of carrying out an armed mutiny. Speaking from an undisclosed location, Mr. Prigozhin has hit back directly at the Russian leader.
The president is deeply mistaken with regard to the betrayal of the motherland. We are the patriots of our motherland. We fought and are fighting, all the fighters of PMC Wagner. And no one is going to turn themselves in at the request of the president, the FSB, or anyone else. We do not want the country to live on in corruption, deceit, and bureaucracy.
With his analysis of the first major attack on the war in Ukraine from the Russian side, here's our defence and diplomatic analyst, Jonathan Marcus.
The most interesting thing are the comments this morning from Yevgeny Prigozhin that seem to be pointing much more explicitly at Mr. Putin himself. Remember, up until now, Mr. Prigozhin had not mentioned Mr. Putin's name. And so far, Mr. Putin, in his attacks on the mutineers and the people who are challenging the Russian state, has not directly used Mr. Prigozhin's name. But I think it is becoming, in effect, much more a personal struggle now. And I think this is clearly a huge shock to the Russian system. It's the most serious threat that Mr. Putin has faced during his whole tenure in power, which goes back a very long way. And I think that underlines the fact that he will have to act decisively to try and contain and put down what the Russian state sees as effectively a mutiny.
What's likely to be the reaction in Ukraine to all of this, and indeed the implication for the war in Ukraine?
Well, clearly the Ukrainians are going to be very pleased. I think that pleasure might be premature, since it's far too early to tell where this Russian crisis is actually going to end, how long-lived it's going to be, what are going to be the ramifications. There's still so much we don't know. I think what is fascinating, though, is that Mr. Prigozhin's comments, I think this was mentioned earlier on in your sequence, it's the first major public attack on the narrative that justified this war. I think that's important. It is also, as I say, a crack in the whole edifice of Mr. Putin's control. So that's important. In the very short term, remember, Rostov-on-Don, which is now held by the Wagner forces, is a crucial location in the war effort. It's not just the headquarters of the Southern Military District, whose army is decisively engaged in Ukraine, but also it's the overall command center for the whole Russian joint forces in Ukraine. Now, clearly, they can be commanded from elsewhere and so on. But one imagines that in the short term, that is going to cause significant disruption and so on. Certainly, from what one sees on Twitter, from normally reliable sources, there doesn't seem to have been any significant impact on Russian military operations over the last 24 hours or so. But it's early days yet.
And I'm just watching on the BBC News Live website that President Zelensky has just made a statement saying that anyone who chooses the path of evil destroys itself and that Russia's weakness is obvious. How do you think President Putin is reacting to all of this? How does he react in a crisis?
Well, look, I think his statement, whilst it didn't mention Mr. Prigozhin by name, was very, very clear. He has to see this threat down. He has to either try and persuade these people to stand down and to give up these mutineers, as he would have it, or he has to put it down by force. One of the significant aspects so far is the apparent ease with which the Wagner forces have seized Rostov. There seems to have been little, if any, opposition to them from the regular army, if you want to call it that. And I think, as pointed out by the British Ministry of Defence in their daily intelligence update this morning, how the Russian military responds in general to this threat, how the Russian regional security forces, especially the Russian National Guard, as they put it, responds, is going to be crucial. Mr. Putin, if he's going to put this mutiny down, is going to have to be able to rely on forces loyal to him.
Jonathan Marcus. Coming up on this podcast, we ask, what does Prigozhin want and how dangerous are these developments for Putin?
Once again, we came here. We want to get the head of the general staff and Shoigu. So long as they're not here, we're remaining here, blocking the city of Rostov. And we'll head for Moscow.
Now, the man at the centre of today's developments, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has had a strange and mysterious rise to power. As we've heard, beginning with Russia's 2014 annexation of Crimea, the mercenary organisation has become an agent of proxy war, an unofficial arm of the Russian military, not only in Eastern Europe, but in Syria and Africa. Since the invasion of Ukraine last year, Wagner has been engaged in some of the fiercest and most costly fighting, even enlisting convicts to fill out its ranks. Now the man at the centre of this, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has had a strange and mysterious rise to power. Here's our Europe regional editor, Paul Moss.
One thing we know is this is a man driven by a genuine hatred of what he sees as the elite and the establishment. You can see this when he rages at what he calls the oligarchs, the cigar-chomping, vodka-drinking sleazebags in Moscow. He really does hate them, and you sometimes get the impression he's just set himself against them. He's now past the point of no return, crossed the Rubicon, heading towards Moscow. Does he think he can take over the country? That would be quite an ambitious hope. But then again, a man who once sold hot dogs has gone a lot further than anyone might have predicted. So I think it would be foolish right now to limit what we think this man, Yevgeny Prigozhin, is capable of.
As Paul says, in the past, Yevgeny Prigozhin has criticised the Russian Defence Ministry and defence ministers, but has always taken care not to criticise Vladimir Putin himself. But now he seems to have crossed that line. Jack Losh is a freelance journalist who has recently returned from Ukraine's front lines and has reported extensively on the Wagner Group. He spoke to Lise Doucette.
Well, it certainly seems as the last 24 hours, it's gone full circle. The full-scale invasion of Ukraine allowed Prigozhin's star very much to rise. After Putin ordered the invasion last year, Wagner mercenaries were among some of the irregular units who were fighting alongside the Russian forces. But the war, as we know, was not going to Putin's plan. And increasingly, Wagner, bolstered by convicts that Prigozhin was directly recruiting from Russian prisons, started playing a more and more central role in the Russian campaign. They were involved in capturing the port city of Mariupol, key cities in the eastern Luhansk region, and most recently, Bakhmut, a town utterly ravaged, utterly destroyed by Wagner's assault there. His tensions with the elite in Moscow, specifically with the Russian military establishment, has been more than an open secret. It's completely burst out into the open over the last few months, where he would issue these sweary, foul-mouthed tirades on his Telegram channel, accusing them of not giving enough ammunition, of not supporting his troops. There was always a sense that he would never go beyond that, never overstep the mark and criticize the capo di capi, the chief mob boss of the Tsar, Putin himself. All of that has changed in the last 24 hours. And what has started off as infighting or beneath Putin now seems increasingly aimed, targeted at the main guy in Russia himself.
Yes, those videos that he was recorded in Bakhmut or other locations in eastern Ukraine, where he was extremely angry, extremely emotional and dramatic. Would you now say perhaps he's crossed the line, has become dangerously reckless? He could lose it all. I mean, this is early hours, but...
It's a huge gamble, and he was always very careful to aim his ire at the subordinates of Putin, the people like Shoigu, the defense minister, Gerasimov, the head of the Russian armed forces. But you never criticize the boss himself. That is changing. We're seeing statement after statement over the last 12 hours increasingly taking aim at Putin himself. In Russia, you get by with what they call a roof, your powerful backers who protect you. And the sense was that Putin was providing that political roof, that that shield from being taken down from the enemies that Prigozhin was increasingly making. And, you know, the sense was that, you know, Prigozhin really was helping the Russian offensive. And there was a sense that he was expecting to be rewarded. He didn't need the money. He had more than that from his various business interests. More likely, he'd be after political cachet, political influence, political position. There were suspicions. Was he after the top job in Russia, in Moscow? Surely nobody would challenge Putin himself. Well, it seems now that his ambitions have no limits. The question now, has he overplayed his hand? He claims to have 25,000 men. Well, I mean, he probably doesn't. Certainly not in Russia. They'll be scattered all around the world. You can't take Russia. You can't take down Putin's system with 25,000 men. All of this now hinges on defections. If he can convince enough of the security services, the army, the Russian National Guard to join his forces, or at the very least, not get involved and stop him, that could really play in his favour.
Freelance journalist Jack Losh speaking to Lise Doucette. For more insight into Prigozhin's motivations, let's hear from the man himself. Video posted to Telegram shows the Wagner leader speaking to the Russian Deputy Defence Minister, Yunus Bek Yevkurov. We've had it translated. The first person you will hear is Prigozhin, claiming that Russian forces have fired upon his forces.
They shoot at us, and we shoot them down.
You shot one down?
We brought one down, a third one too, and we'll bring down all of them if you keep sending them. Because you're hitting innocent civilians. You're destroying civilians. You just blew up a bus with people in it, and you have no conscience about it.
Well, this is the first I'm hearing of it. All of it.
Once again, we came here. We want to get the head of the general staff and Shoigu. So long as they're not here, we're remaining here, blocking the city of Rostov. And we'll head for Moscow.
Okay, then I ask you to release the regular soldiers from the headquarters.
No, no way, guys. We're staying here.
You see, because when...
No, not interrupting you from commanding the troops.
Commanding the troops, of course. We shouldn't get in places where guys are dying.
Guys are dying because you're throwing them into the meat grinder. That's not rhetorical. Guys are dying because you're throwing them into the meat grinder. Without ammunition, without thought, without any plans. You're just senile clowns.
Meanwhile, President Zelensky of Ukraine has tweeted that Russia's weakness is obvious, and the longer Russia keeps its troops and mercenaries on our land, the more chaos, pain and problems it will get for itself later. Yuri Sack is an advisor to Ukraine's Minister of Defence. He spoke to Lise Doucette about the events taking place in Russia.
We are little by little running out of popcorn because the way things develop, it's unprecedented. But on a serious note, on February 23, the whole world thought that Russia was the second most powerful army in the world. And today we're seeing how Russian army is becoming the second most powerful army in Russia. So this is something that we knew was going to happen. And we told about this because the Kremlin has been lying for such a long time. And the lies that they were spreading about everything, about the situation on the front line, about the losses of the Russian army, this lie was so gigantic that sooner or later this wasn't going to implode and lead to a civil war. And what we are seeing now in Russia is a civil war, and we continue to be the target of Russian missile terror. For example, last night they have launched more than 50 missiles at Ukrainian cities, including Kyiv. Whatever makes Russia weaker, and what happens now is making Russia weaker, makes the victory closer.
Yes, but as you mentioned, even as this drama unfolded on Friday evening, it didn't stop. In fact, it seems to have even accelerated the attacks against Ukraine, including Kyiv. So it's very early to say what will be the impact on the course of this war.
Exactly. And this is why, while we are watching the situation carefully, we are extremely vigilant. We have no intention to slow down.
Do you call this a coup?
At this moment, we would like to avoid, you know, giving names to what is happening right now. For us, all participants of this civil war in Russia are war criminals, and we will continue our efforts to make sure that we bring them all to account, because they have all committed atrocities and war crimes on our land.
Anything else, Yuri Sak, that you've noticed in the past, it's less than 24 hours?
The Russian propaganda machine is in panic. Their messages are confused. It's very clear that they haven't expected this to happen, and they are now in a complete disarray. Another important thing, which I think will, in a way, predetermine what will happen next, is the fact that the terrorist group Wagner, they are a strong force and they have battlefield experience, and they will be now standing up against both Russian internal military forces that don't have any military experience. So it's going to be something that we have to watch very carefully.
Yuri Sak, an advisor to Ukraine's Minister of Defense, giving us the Ukrainian government's reaction to the situation in Russia. So how will the latest developments in Russia affect the course of the war in Ukraine? Shashank Joshi is the defense editor at The Economist. He also spoke to Lise Doucette from London.
It'll have a hugely disruptive impact. Prigozhin has said he's not trying to stop the war. Indeed, we've got reports that Wagner fighters are allowing Russian helicopters to take off as long as they have Wagner personnel aboard, making sure that they're bombing Ukrainians rather than Wagner troops on the ground. But it's inevitable this will disrupt the conflict. And you can see that if you look at the two centers of the insurrection. Rostov is not only very close to Ukraine, it's also the operational headquarters of the Russian war in Ukraine. It's really the command node for everything. And if you look at the other big site further to the north around Voronezh, again, that's a really important area for logistics flowing west into the northern part of the front around Kharkiv province in Ukraine. Now, I don't think this will cause the war to grind to a halt. The supplies inside the country, we've seen attacks continue overnight, but I do think this will be a huge disruption to forces inside the country, logistically and in terms of the command above them.
Shashank Joshi. This is all a huge challenge to the Kremlin and to President Vladimir Putin. In Putin's TV address, he said this is a stab in the back for the country and the Russian people. This is tough talking we're seeing from Putin, someone who's trying to show that he's still in control of the situation. But is he? His spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, says he's working in the Kremlin as normal. My colleague, Lise Doucette, has been speaking to Sergei Radchenko, Professor of International Relations at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, for his assessment of the challenge facing the Russian President, Vladimir Putin.
This is an unprecedented crisis. Russia has not seen anything like this since 1993, probably, when there was the large major crisis, standoff between the government or parts of the government. So this is extremely serious, I think. And if you listen to Putin's speech this morning, you would see that he's clearly upset. He feels that he has been stabbed in the back by Prigozhin, and he is promising vengeance. But the question is, does he have the capabilities to do so? I think so. I think Prigozhin is really not in a position at the moment to threaten Putin. But obviously what we're seeing now is something that could unfold into a broader civil war.
What we saw last night was televised statements by Russian military chiefs who had been seen to be close to Prigozhin, but were now coming out and saying, please, my brother, we're all part of the same family, please pull back from this. Can President Putin count on the loyalty of his other top commanders now?
What you're referring to are two statements, one by General Sergei Surovikin, who actually was on very close terms, I would even call him a Prigozhin ally, whom Prigozhin had hoped to put in place of the current Minister of Defense, Shoigu. He's actually been kind of speaking in favor of him and saying that he's been a very effective guy. And now this guy, Surovikin, has made a statement effectively against Prigozhin. And there was also the deputy head of the GRU, which is now called the GU in Russia, the military intelligence, Vladimir Alexeyev, who has also spoken against Prigozhin. Both of them, I think, were speaking out of Rostov. But the interesting thing is this morning we saw a video of Prigozhin actually talking to Alexeyev in Rostov, as a matter of fact. So obviously they're in the same city. And it's not really clear what's happening. It seems that Prigozhin has Rostov under his control. He's been able to take over military sites around the city. So he's kind of established a base for himself. The question is he going to exploit that position and widen his base, or is he making a dash for Moscow? It seems that his forces now are trying to make that dash for Moscow in order to confront the Russian government directly in the capital city.
Can he really make a dash for Moscow?
Well, he's got the forces. Wagner is a fairly sizable group of people. They're extremely well equipped. They are well trained. After all, they're the ones who stood for months in Bakhmut fighting against the Ukrainian forces there. So you could argue that his forces are perhaps the most capable forces in Russia right this moment. Now, Putin has lined up a lot of people behind himself, obviously the Minister of Defense, obviously the FSB, which is the security service, which has called for Prigozhin's arrest. Oh, lots of politicians have come out condemning Prigozhin, including, by the way, the head of Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, who has condemned him. But, you can ride far just by being daring these days in Russia. And I think Prigozhin understands that. I think he thinks he's got this one chance to deliver victory for himself, and he's using it to utmost.
Sergei Radchenko. As you've been hearing in this special edition of the Global News podcast, the leader of the Wagner mercenary group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has launched a scathing attack on the Russian military leadership and appears to be advancing towards Moscow after taking control of the southern city of Rostov-on-Don. In an address to the Russian people, President Putin has promised decisive action to crush the armed mutiny. We'll bring you more on that in our next edition. In the meantime, you can get live updates on this moving story on the BBC News Live webpage. If you want to comment on this podcast, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on Twitter at Global News Pod. This edition was produced by Alice Adderley and was mixed by Alicia Thursting. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Rachel Wright. Until next time, goodbye.
When the cost of living rises, how you invest matters even more. A financial advisor can help you make sense of it all. Now's the time to invest with advice. Visit dynamic.ca/advice to learn more.